Our next speaker. Actually, I was looking at the title of the next speaker, and I'm reminded that when in pure math talks, people like to play around with their titles, and it's very rare to have such a descriptive title as this one. In fact, my favorite undescriptive title I've seen in a pure math conference. Well, there's a special operator algebra called OM, and the title of the talk was on OM. Sean Ramon will be speaking on simulation studies in bioelectrical and biomagnetic reconstructions of current structure purposes.
Thank you. Let's see if I can operate this thing. Works. Okay. First thing is, it's a very good descriptive title, and thank you for saying that. And that's where the truth in advertising ends. What I'm going to do is maybe cover a lot of material in a general fashion and focus on the curved surfaces as well as planar surfaces, and also go beyond that and talk about the actual working with the data from the human brain as well as from the human heart to see what kind of reconstructions we have done, and also raise the question, where do we need to go from there? So start with what I'm going to do today is just give a general idea of what the biomagnetism is. A lot of people might know about it, and also some people might be hearing it first time, so it will be an introductory talk. And then define the forward problem. I'm assuming everybody knows the forward bioelectric problem, so it doesn't need to be said much on that. And then the inverse problem, using the minimum norm or the pseudo-inverse, or applying the weighting function, and then regularization and other things. And then we apply a image processing technique known as the alternating projections. I will talk about that. And then begin to talk about examples of reconstructions which will be on a planar surface and also on a curved surface. And then I will jump into conducting volumes and surfaces. And once we jump from non-conducting to here, problems become very horrendous because we have to deal with the primary source and the secondary volume currents or the conductivity currents. And then we have to model the volume itself, and which most of the time we can get away what is known as a boundary element or BEM or the integral representations. Most of the time it doesn't work because BEM generally works for maybe three or four surfaces, and also if the surfaces are very close, like in the brain or in the body, then you do have to go to the finite element modeling. And also most of the body tissue is isotropic, but there is a like heart or the brain or even the muscle fibers, they are all anisotropic electrically. So the finite element becomes the choice to go with it. So if you do that, then, and if you're looking for like a millimeter size resolution, so you can sort of make an estimate, whole head or whole body, you're talking about very easily from 6 to 8 million unknowns or equations. And so the problem right away jumps into supercomputing domain. And even the San Diego Supercomputing Center doesn't have that much memory. And so most of my computing work has been under the table with the Cray Research Computing Center in Minnesota. And they have been very generous to provide me free time, which by now might be at least $10 or $15 million. So we have been lucky enough to do that. However, nowadays, now that I'm talking about computers, nowadays what is happening is the personal workstations are becoming fast and aware. We can very easily sort of form a cluster of 64 or 200 personal workstations. So slowly we are moving away from supercomputers to the desktop machines. And like all of us, I also use MATLAB, and you can parallelize MATLAB on a cluster of computers. So the matrix inversion could be done very fast. But still, it is not fast enough like a T3D supercomputer. And just to give an idea, a typical forward problem of the human head on a CRIC T3D machine is about 1 hour time frame. And on a computer like a 64 machines, like a workstations, it still takes about 6 hours to 8 hours. And then the computational errors, like Cray machines are usually 64-bit, or no, hold it, they're 128-bit, while personal computers are still 32-bit. So all those error problems do crop up when you do the iterations. Anyway, so starting from that background, and by the way, if there are any questions, just ask as they arise instead of waiting at the end. That's best. Okay, here is an example of magnetocardiography. What it means is, like, in the heart is an electrical structure. So, like, when the heart muscle fires, it produces the potentials on the body. And in addition, it also produces the magnetic field. And the signature which is coming out is known as a magnetocardiogram. So it will produce two signatures. One will be the vertical component of the field. When I say vertical or normal, I mean normal to the chest. And then also it will produce magnetic field this way based on the current component. So you can detect both of them. And it is being done all the time. On the brain, there are a lot of activities going on, what we call gray matter. Gray matter, that's where most of the neurons are. And whenever we do anything, so like right now I'm talking, there are a lot of neurons are firing, and so that gray layer, and then connected from there is the fibers which are going to my mouth or my hands, and that is what becomes the white matter. And so all those electrical activity, they produce also the scalp potentials, which is EEG, and the magnetic field comes out of the brain, and that becomes the magnetoencephalogram. Here, B is the magnetic field signature, common notation in EM fields. Oh, one more thing. The skull in our head is electrically highly resistive. So the EEG is about 4,000 times less on the scalp as what you see actually in the neuron, while the magnetic fields do not get impeded by the skull. So the magnetic signature is not blurred by the skull itself. So the skull does blur the electrical signature. So we have to account for that also. Okay, and a more detailed structure of the brain is that generally if you look at any brain slices from the MRI data or in a brain atlas, you will see the brain has a wavy surface. And this is one of the things. And generally they are known as leukocytes, and the top portion is anatomical name gyrus. And neurons sitting here, when they fire, they will produce the magnetic field lines going out that way. And the neurons which are sitting here, they will produce magnetic field that way. So when you measure the magnetic field from here, you are picking up this component. From side, you are picking up generally these neuron activity. So that's what happens. Okay. How do we measure these things? Now, before I go on to that, one more thing. What is the scale factor of these fields? Here is a sort of like a comparative analysis, the magnetic field of the Earth is about half a Gauss. And, oh yeah, these values are in Tesla. So, and 10,000 Gauss is equal to 1 Tesla. That's the number. And so if we are walking around or a car at 50 meters, those things itself produce very strong magnetic field as compared to the magnetic field of the human heart or human brain. And so to measure these things, usually a shielded room is needed. So all these measurements are done in a shielded room. The way these things are measured is that usually used a squid technology, and generally they have one sensing coil and one bucking coil, and usually they run in opposition to each other. So what happens is you cancel the background noise and you pick up only the gradient of the field between these two, and if you know the shape of the coil and the separation, you can integrate and find the magnetic field out of that. And on the other side is an example of like you have many channels sitting. So generally the measurements are done. Nowadays, in the market, about 31 channels is the least number, and 600 channels is the high number. And people are talking about larger systems also, which could cover not only the head, but also up to the back of the neck also, because there is a lot of activity at the column of the brain or the lower brain in which people are interested. So people are going up to that level of measurements. Okay, here is a sort of like a PR picture. Oh, maybe this might look... Philips will be happy with that. Okay. Here is a system which is a twin Dewar system. And each Dewar has a 31 channels on it. So like a person lying on the table, and you can look from both sides. And the advantage of the split Dewar is that you can set them up so they are sort of like at a 90 degrees with each other. So you can make the measurements and then do the 90 degree correlation also. So this way it gives you vector information. Okay, so here is an example of measuring the magnetic field of the cardiac magnetic field, and the same system you can use it for measuring the brain or MEG also. And believe me, nobody looks that happy while while the measurements are going on. So okay, moving onward. Just to summarize it, this is a very sort of a good summary of where the technology is at this moment. The main push at this moment is to find what is known as a functional tomography, or measuring the functional aspects of the brain or the heart. And the EEG, MEG, or ECG, MCG, they give you millisecond time frame measurements. The inverse problem is very problematic. That's the simplest way of putting it, to find where the sources are. If you move towards computed tomography or functional MRI, that also... Functional MRI measures the blood flow, where the electrical activity is happening in the brain. So like electrical activity happens first, and because the neurons are consuming a lot of oxygen, so the blood has to rush into supply. So the secondary effect is the hemodynamic effect, which you can measure with fMRI. And that's why there is a delay of about generally between 1 to 10 seconds in the fMRI measurement. Then beyond that comes the measurement of what is known as a positron emission PET or the SPECT, those things measure what is known as a biochemical changes, and they are more far removed in time, somewhere between anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour. So now you can see, compared to the temporal frame, probably EEG, MEG is best, fMRI is the next choice. There is another technology which is not mentioned here, is known as a functional microwave spectroscopy, which is becoming very popular, but that also has a time frame of about same here, between 1 to 10 seconds. And spatial resolution, usually with the current systems which are available in the market, between 2 to 4 millimeter is a good number for these, all these four techniques. CT generally comes out to be better when it comes to spatial, about 1 millimeter resolution, very common. Okay, so from this introduction, coming back, how do we do the inverse and those kind of things? So the way we do it, we model the forward problem and then we begin to work on the inverse. So biomagnetic forward modeling is based on the Bio-Savart law. So B is the magnetic field, J is the current, and R minus R prime is the separation between the source and the measuring point. And then we can sort of break the domain down into discrete pixels, and then you can write the whole thing as a matrix. And so magnetic field, which is measured, is B, and R will be the matrix which connects the source points to the measurement points or where the sampling coils are. And D is the current representation or current sources in the body. And from there, to jump forward to how to do the inverse, one very common technique which we have been using, which a lot of people use, is to do the minimum norm. And if the measurement points and the unknowns were same, then the matrix will be square matrix and we can do the inversion very easily. Life will be very good, but unfortunately it's not. The measurement points are generally less than the number of currents in the either in the heart or in the brain. So the problem is ill-posed, and one way to do is to do the pseudo-inverse. And pseudo-inverse works out very well if you're looking at the reconstruction in a planar surface. If we move from there to curved surface, reconstruction generally fails, and then you have to begin to apply like some weighting function based on where the pixel is to the sample point, some kind of inverse weighting, or using some kind of a Lagrange multipliers or regularization. So all those things need to be applied here. So that's the first step, to get an initial image of the sources. Once we know that, then the next step is to apply some kind of a priori knowledge into it. And there are several ways of doing a priori knowledge, is that when we are working in the biological medium, we can fold in the anatomy. I mean, we know using the MRI images. We can also fold in the electrophysiology, like we know how this cell fires, so we can fold in that, so additional information. We can also fold in, like saying, okay, sources are dipolar, so they are linear elements, or sources are quadrupolar, so we can fold in those kind of information. We can also do some kind of forward computations beforehand. So like we can assume, okay, in the whole head or wherever, the there is a limited set of forward possibilities. Even though they are very large, they are in thousands, but we can always compute them beforehand, so forward computation could be just fed into a neural network and we can work from there. So all those things are possible. So alternating projection is the one method which we have applied in addition to so many other things. The way alternating projections are what is known as PoCs. PoCs is the common name which is used, is that I can get a from the pseudo-inverse, I can get the initial guess, either weighted pseudo-inverse or just plain pseudo-inverse, then force the constraints on the solution space by an example saying that the all the current distribution is dipolar or linear elements. So then what I could do is just, or another constant could be that it is confined to a one surface than the other, then begin to iterate between all these constraints and force the solution to some kind of a best estimate. So that's the one way of doing it. To mathematically implement this, let's assume that the solutions are line-like, so I have a line-like space, and I have, from the pseudo-inverse, I have one guess of the D, and I can use an orthogonal projection from first estimate to the next one by using the similar to the pseudo-inverse operator, and that gives me its complement in the orthogonal space. And so I can say that my true solution might be D hat and the orthogonal complement of it. And so this gives me a next iteration to go for. And so what I could do is that, assuming it is a linear elements, I can just take first estimate, find the its complement, and then take that as add to that to my initial pseudo-inverse estimate, project it backward again on the line-like elements, and keep going back and forth till the error in the measurement becomes minimum or it reaches to the least possible value. So we are whenever we do the one guess, we go back and jump into the forward computations and find the forward modeling, compare with the measurement, and keep reducing the error that way. So in doing so, then we begin to see the some improvement. And the way, one best way of doing is to, if we are working in a rectangular grid or even the square grid, we can assume that look at the reconstruction intensity, and the, if the pixel A has the intensity which is higher than all of them combined, so like taking the set of two at a time, E and B, B and C, C and D, and D and E, if A comes out to be higher with all those, then we keep the pixel A as the true value. And if it is lower than any one of them, we just simply reject it and keep going into iteration this way. And so this is how it is implemented. And now let me sort of summarize and then begin to show the examples. So a whole the reconstruction comes out to be, we have a measured biomagnetic data, make the best guess whichever way is possible. Then we can fold in other physical from Bio Savart's law, make it a fast field computations, fold in the object knowledge, like it could be linear elements, and then just go into iterative loop, and then final answer, we begin to compare with the non-profiles and compare with the patient database and try to derive information out of it. Okay, so now let's go for the examples of the reconstruction. I will start with the simple ones and then go to the real application. So a very simple example is of two conductors in a planar sampling surface. And here, this is the geometry of the conductors. Looking from the top, this is the magnetic field profile. And one conductor is carrying more current, and the other conductor is carrying less current. That's why the field lines, field intensity is lower over here. Doing the pseudo-inverse reconstruction, we end up with this solution. And as you can see, it is sort of really fuzzy. Do the box iteration one time, and you can see it is beginning to improve. This is the box iteration 8 times, and this is after 16 times. So after 16 iterations, we can recover the conductors. And as you can see, this one comes out to be higher in intensity as the lower one. So we can reconstruct the shape as well as the current flowing into the conductor also in that fashion. And here is another construction of a linear in which the geometry is more like lambda shape, and it comes actually what is known as a bundle of His. And here I need to sort of go back into anatomy just for reference only. This is related to the heart. Heart sort of looks like this way. Left ventricle, right ventricle, then we have an atria. And what happens is electrically this is known as a SA node or sinoatrial node. And then from there it comes down, and this is known as a AV node or atrioventricular node. And then from here onward it comes down this way, and then it begins to connect to the ventricle. And these are the wires, or the fibers, I should say, not wires. You won't find any electrical wires there. Okay, anyway, so these are there. And the impulse, or which is the trigger pulse, which flows from here to here, this is known as a bundle of His. I may be wrong, His is either Dutch name, and based on His, it is known as a bundle of His. He is the one who invented it. And here, this bundle carries a lot of fibers, and the current flowing there has a propagation velocity which is different, and that's why this is very important to model this. And so then this branches out in different areas. So most of the time when we get all these problems, when the heart is not functioning properly, in some fibers the current flow may be slower, in other words it will be faster, then these areas, they do not fire in sequence. So, and that's the reason bundle of His detection is very important in cardiac problem. So looking from the magnetic field point of view, if we can model the bundle of His propagation, then we can look into what is known as a cardiac arrhythmia problem non-invasively. And this is what we did here. So looking at the magnetic field profile here, looks like this way. And going through the reconstruction, we can again reconstruct the current strongly and then branching out halfway into different fibers. So this is just a beginning of the two fibers. Now we are going at maybe like 1,000 fibers going in that direction. Let's see, what time do I need to stop?
25 after.
Okay, 20, so 25 after. So, okay, so I need to hurry up then. Okay, so jumping forward, because here is a reconstruction of, here we are trying to be very colloquial about it. Here is a conductorship in UWB letters, and this is the magnetic field profile, and this is the minimum reconstruction, and then going through the 16 iterations, we can recover the shape of the conductor. So it's not only we can reconstruct the simple shapes, but also complicated shapes also. And here is a reconstruction on a curved surface. The first figure is for the shape of the conductors on a curved surface, and its purpose here is we are trying to mimic hard surface here right now. This is the magnetic field profile looking at the slanted surface. This is the minimum norm reconstruction and a magnified view, as you can see how diffused it is as compared to the original shape. And then applying the iterative improvements, we can recover some of the shape of the conductor. But as you can see, there is an error. Shape is not exactly. And this can be further improved by using some kind of a regularization in the matrix inversion. Okay, from this point onward, I will, because I'm coming close to time, so I will jump straight to biomedical applications. This is a full-blown way how things are done. For reconstruction here, we do need to fuse data, MRI data, with the biomagnetic data. This is reconstruction. So we take the MRI scan of the head, either axial slices or sagittal slices, and build a computer model of the head. And building the computer model of the head is not simple. We have to manually go back and identify all the tissue types, every pixel. Even if one pixel is correct, all the computations go wrong. So we have to identify. So doing all that, then we take the biomagnetic data and we do use some kind of a landmark point. So what happens is, put some coils on the head, feed in like a microampere current, and sense it with the biomagnetometer, so we know where the position of the sensing coils versus the coil on the head. Same place, put the vitamin E capsules. They show up in the MRI scan, so we know the landmark point, so we can transfer biomagnetic data to the MRI data, and now we have the model built. And then doing the inverse localization based on either finite element and using the forward inverse computation. So we assume the solution, first the solution, then jump back and forth between forward finite element model and then inverse. And whatever solution comes, then we need to keep iterating and keep reducing the L2 norm of the error. And there are all sorts of ways we look for how to make it faster. Then eventually putting the data, combining the data with the MRI images. That's what we do. And the example of reconstruction is, once again, once we jump into the head, there is no way to verify whether our reconstruction is correct or not. The closest comes is when we do reconstruction, especially like, I hope none of you have any brain surgery ever, but you ever end up in a hospital like where they have to perform a brain surgery. Sometimes they do have to open up the whole brain go inside and do the functional mapping while the operation is going on. So they have to test where the language centers are and everything. So those things are known as electrocortical recording. Or so like they put the electrode on the cortex and they measure it. And similarly, the data can also be collected from the magnetic field measurement, which is non-invasive. And then electrocorticogram or ECOG measures the data only on the cortical surface. Very rarely anybody goes inside the brain. However, here we are showing the data for somatosensory cortex, which simply means one example could be like a median nerve. So like here is the nerve. So like when I move my thumb, this nerve is getting stimulated, and its stimulation center is sort of like, if I move this thumb, it is about 4 centimeter down, about 2 centimeter inside. So, okay, that's the way. And it generally shows that this is known as a Mann's leucus, and it ends up being somewhere in this area. We know that from physiology. Okay. So electrocorticogram measurements will project that the data is here. The magnetic field inversion, using our modeling techniques, it ends up being there. So it is not very far away from where the actual activation site might be. So it shows, even though we are not perfect, but we are getting there at this moment. So here is one example. Then I will show you one example of, and then I will stop. This is the example for the human heart. And so here what we are looking at is one slice, and one more thing. This is one of the biggest problems. Most of us simple people think left, right, but radiology people invert the left and right. So whenever they work, left and right is inverted in the figures. So here what we are looking at is left ventricle of the heart, right ventricle, and then chest, and these are the lungs. And this is, when you look at the heart data, which is generally the QRS complex, and this data set is from 31 channel of the data taken in the heart of a person. And just looking at the QRS complex itself, which represents the entire heartbeat and how it functions, and each, this represents a combination of the entire heart wall. So like a different time frame, different area of the heart wall is getting excited. So it has a time information in it. So applying the forward inverse modeling with the millisecond time frame on it, which is about, this is almost about 60 milliseconds. Then we end up, then combining all the data, we end up on the heart surface, looking at the heart surface, we end up this kind of a current distribution on the heart surface. And so this gives us what will be a distribution will be. Now the people who have some kind of a heart problem, if everything was normal in the heart, like each area of the heart is firing in the sequence, then nothing goes wrong and we have a very nice QRS complex. But suppose if some area of the heart wall is firing out of sequence with the other portions of the heart wall, then what happens is that those electrical currents, they sort of circulate in the heart wall and they eventually break out of the heart surface, epicardium, but they are slightly delayed in the time fashion. Because of that, you end up with what is known as a late potentials in the QRS complex. And these we reconstructed these late potentials using the forward inverse reconstruction technique. And the interesting thing is that we find, as you can see, total reversal of the current distribution as compared to the normal QRS complex. So now let me summarize. At this moment, even though our results are showing that we are moving in the right direction, but we are not close enough to go into, like, using into clinical way yet. So far, we have focused only on the heart surface. Next step is to go inside the heart wall and do the total 3D reconstruction. Our advantage is we are accounting the volume currents very precisely using a very detailed structure of the domain. Next step is to jump into heart wall. Similarly, in the brain, go inside the cortical surface, inside the brain, and begin to do the reconstruction. And then generating the knowledge base, which eventually could be useful for non-invasive diagnostics. So I will stop here.
Any questions?
Yes, please.
I've been told, at least for EEG, that the brain noise from blinking your eyes certainly is much stronger than the signal that you want to detect. Is the same true for magnetic sensing?
Yes. The muscle artifacts, like moving shoulders or this, or blinking like this, they all sort of overtake the EEG and as well as MEG both. Yeah. But you can develop an artifact, this blinking artifact filter. That's the name of it. Yeah.
So are you measuring with the measuring instrument the magnetic field or the magnetic flux?
We are measuring the second order gradient of the field. So it is d2b over dx2.
Directly, you're not doing any flux measurement?
No. And then from there we are, in a way we are measuring the flux in the coil, but we have the coil size. So from there we can measure the point-wise dB over dx.
So if you're measuring the flux, why don't you use a vector potential formulation rather than Biot-Savart law?
That has been suggested a lot of time, and you can do the vector potential formulation also using that way. I cannot answer that question before thinking a little bit more that why do I use Biot-Savart line instead of a vector potential.
The reason I ask is because you could speed up the computation significantly if you're using the Biot-Savart law over filaments. Then to convert the surface integral to alignment. Analytic closed form solutions for, say, square loops.
Mathematically, you are perfectly correct and true, and it is done all the time in boundary element modeling. The reason we don't do it this way is because the tissue properties are anisotropic, and often they are very difficult to carry forward in the vector potential modeling. So material properties do cause that problem. Yeah. That's the main reason. Now, having said that, there is one person, only one person I know, in Netherlands who claims that he can include that in boundary element modeling. But I haven't heard anybody else doing that. Yeah.
Next part is